all of us have traveled across bridges. When we travel across a bridge, it typically means that two bodies of land have been separated by a challenge. There's either a waterway, a lake, or a river that has to be crossed, that we can't drive across, so they construct a bridge. Or perhaps there's one mountain range to another range, one large hill to another hill, separated by a valley, a low spot, that you can't drive across or it's too big, so they construct a bridge. This bridge is designed to take you from where you are to where you are trying to go. You're trying to get from here to there, so they make a construct, they construct a bridge that you can cross over from where you are to where you need to be. There is a bridge that God has constructed for everyone to move from the natural to the supernatural. He has given you a bridge. You do not have to stay stuck where you are. You can literally move from where you are, the natural, into the supernatural, but you got to cross the bridge. The bridge that God has constructed for you to move from the natural to the supernatural is the bridge called faith. It is the only bridge that he has constructed. So if you don't use that bridge, you don't cross over. No matter how bad you want to cross over, no matter how much you need to cross over, without the faith bridge, you cannot move from the natural into the supernatural. We went through Hebrews chapter 11. We defined faith, acting like God is telling the truth, acting like it is so, even when it's not so, in order that it might be so, simply because God said so. We went into great depth trying to define the term. Now that we have constructed the bridge, it's time to cross over. Because you can have a bridge that folk don't use. But a bridge unused becomes a useless bridge to those who need it most. And trust me, what many of us need, either in our lives or in the lives of folk we know, demands the supernatural. And the reason you know it demands the supernatural is the natural hadn't fixed it. The natural hadn't changed it, reversed it, tweaked it. It hadn't done anything substantial with it. And so it's time to cross over. But there's only one bridge, and that's the faith bridge. Now, what you need to know is the power of unbelief. Because faith, if it's the only bridge and you don't have it, unbelief will keep you stuck where you are. Unbelief is so powerful, we read in chapter 13 that Jesus limited what he would do because of unbelief. Unbelief is so powerful, it'll stop God's work in your life. Unbelief is so powerful, it'll keep God at a distance. Unbelief is so powerful that you can spend the rest of your life stuck where you are and never cross over to see the supernatural. You'll see other folk on the other side of the bridge waving at you because you are too scared to cross over the bridge of faith. For where there was unbelief, it said, there were few miracles. So if we can get you and me and us individually and collectively to drive over spiritually this bridge, if on the other side of this bridge is the supernatural, that means when you cross over, you'll be seeing a lot more of it. So I want to tell everybody here, it's time to cross over. But I don't want you to cross by yourself. I want you to bring some other folk across here because you got some friends who stuck too. You got some fellow saints who stuck too. So here we are. We're going to start off with a story. Story here in chapter 17. We have a father whose son is crazy. This boy crazy. He's called a Looney Tune. He's called a lunatic. He's mentally unstable. He's off. Not only that, but he's ill. It says he's lunatic and he's ill. So he's got mental problems and he's got physical problems. He's physically impaired. The mental has influenced the physical. Not only that, but he's suicidal. He throws himself into the fire. He throws himself into the water. Mark chapter 9 and Luke chapter 9 both tell the same story. Mark has an extended version of the story in his epistle. This guy has lost it. We find out from the other passages, he goes into convulsions. He has what you and I would call epileptic fits. So everything is wrong with this boy. This boy has all kind of things wrong with him. Now, I'm sure you know some crazy folk, some lunatics, folks who you would say, you got to be out of your mind. Some of us live with them. Many a parent who's told the church, you got to be crazy. Thinking like you think, doing what you're doing, acting like you acting, something is wrong with you. In fact, for some of us, all we need is a mirror to see crazy. You know, I'm fine, nobody else. A mirror is all you need. I'm told that one of every three people are off. So now I want you to look to your left. Look to your left. Now I want you to look to your right. If those two people look stable, you're it. This boy had something wrong with him, and we have somebody in his life who cared. His father. Natural for a father to care about a son. His father cared that he had a suicidal, very sick, epileptic son who was mentally off at some way who needed to be delivered. And everybody in here either has something from which they need to be delivered or know someone who has something from which they need help that the natural can fix. So what does Daddy do? Verse 16. I brought him to your disciples and they could not cure him. He said, I had a problem and I went to your peeps. I went to your homies. I went to the ones who've been assigned to deliver folk on your behalf. Now let's answer the question, why did Daddy take his son to the disciples? The answer to that is in the first verse of chapter 10 of Matthew. I read it to you. The first verse of chapter 10 of Matthew says, Jesus summoned his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. So Jesus had deputized his disciples to act on his behalf to help hurting folk. Help them spiritually, help them physically, and help them circumstantially. So he told the 12, I deputize you. You're to go out there in my name, on my behalf, where I can't be there or I'm not there, and I want you to help folk get delivered. So they've been duly authorized to be deliverers on Christ's behalf. So the Father goes to the disciples who have been authorized to deal with the problem his son is facing. He says, since Jesus has authorized y'all to help me deliver my boy. He then goes and tells Jesus, I went to the folk you told me to go to. I went to the folk you authorized me to go to, and your people couldn't help me. I went to church and they couldn't help me. I went to the leadership, the pastors, the deacons, other folk, and they could not help me. It's bad when you go to the folk who Jesus said should be able to help you because they've been authorized to help you, and the duly authorized folk can't help you. So we have a, watch this, disappointed dad because he's got a major problem in his home with his son, and the authorized folk who've been given authority can't fix it. He brings the boy to Jesus. Stay with me here. When he brings the boy to Jesus, it says in verse 17, bring him here to me. Jesus rebuked him and the demon came out and the boy was cured at once. Now notice what Jesus says before he says, bring the boy to me. You unbelieving and perverted generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I put up with you? Doesn't it sound like Jesus say, y'all getting on my nerves? Huh? He says, y'all are getting on my last nerve. How long do I have to go through this? How often do I have to tell y'all the same thing over and over and over? How many meetings do I have to come to? How many counseling sessions we have to go through before you will get, I'm tired of talking. Any of you have any folk in your life you got to talk to over and over and over and about the same thing? Okay? That's what Jesus is saying. One of the other versions says he felt sad. Matthew says he got mad. Okay? So he started off sad. Then he went to, y'all are driving me crazy. Why? Why is Jesus upset? He says, you are a generation that have upset me because, watch this, you are unbelieving. And your unbelief has made you perverted. Whoa. Faithlessness leads to perversion. Your unbelief has perverted your thinking. It has perverted how you operate. It has perverted how you look at me. And you're making me have to go through the same stuff over and over and over and over again. Because faithlessness leads to perversion. He says, you are perverted. The generation is perverted. Bring him to me. Now, it says, when he brings the boy to Jesus, Jesus speaks to the demon, and the boy is cured at once. Interesting. The boy's got a mental problem. He's got a physical problem. He's got the medical issues, he's got all this. But behind all this is a demon. If you don't see the demon and you don't understand the demon, then you're just going to be dealing with mental problems and physical problems and circumstances. Jesus went to the source. Because the source of his problem was spiritual. The mental problems, the physical problems, the jumping in the fire and jumping in the water was fruit of another root. But if you aren't spiritual enough to see it, or if you're spiritual enough to see it, but not spiritual enough to address it, then what you do is stay crazy. You stay a lunatic. You stay unhealthy. You stay circumstantially bound because you have not learned to go to the spiritual first. If I have a headache and I go to Walgreens and get Excedrin because I know I got a headache, and I go buy, I use that, I go buy some more, I use that. I go to the doctor and then he tells me, no, you have a tumor. Now, my symptoms are the same. I got a headache. but my root is different. And as long as I insist on Walgreens, I'm going to have to learn to live with a headache. And I might have to die with a headache because I've been spending all my time and all my money treating the wrong thing. When if I'm not willing to identify a tumor because I don't like doctors and he might find something and I don't want to be operated on, then I'm going to have to learn to live in my misery. And a lot of folk are having to exist in their misery because they refuse to pay attention to what the great physician has to say about the diagnosis of what's wrong. And so many Christians are living miserable lives because of a refusal. Now, let me take a step back. Every problem doesn't exist because there is a spiritual a negative reason. In other words, you can have a headache just because something is wrong physically. It's not a demon. Okay? It's just a headache. Well, what should I do? How do I know? When you go to a doctor, because the headache won't go away, and you go to a doctor, he's going to look deeper to see if it's deeper. He's going to x-ray it. He's going to look deeper to see it's deeper. And then the doctor will tell you, no, it's just a headache. We've got the problem that we don't bother to go deeper to find out if it is deeper. We become satisfied with the surface, which fundamentally, as you'll see in a moment, is unbelief. Here's where some of you will see a supernatural. As we go through this process this far, it says, when Jesus spoke to the demon came out at once. Here's when you know you've hit the supernatural. When you've been dealing with stuff for years, you get your faith life right, and it disappears overnight. Because, see, that's the supernatural. You know that's not natural because you've been dealing with this addiction. You've been dealing with this problem. You've been dealing with this mindset. You've been dealing with this circumstance. And you've tried this and tried that and tried this and tried that and tried this and that. It hadn't worked. And all of a sudden, you cross this bridge of faith and bam! God comes out of nowhere and takes away what was owning you for an extended period of time. It says when Jesus showed up, he sucked that thing up. Because it was spiritual and Jesus addressed it spiritually, it got addressed quickly. It didn't take forever. So, Jesus cures the boy. Ah, now it gets interesting. Because verse 19, then the disciples came to Jesus privately. Jesus, me and your boys need to talk to you. Now, why are they going to call him aside privately? Because they're in a bigger group. Mark says the scribes were there. There's a whole big group there. He said, can we talk to you? Just come on. Why could we not drive it out? Now, they're embarrassed. They've been over there doing their hocus pocus stuff, whatever they were doing. Nothing happening. Boy, getting worse. I'm going, they're counseling, they doing all this stuff to try to deliver the boy. Nothing happening. Jesus showed up in 1 second. Bam. Over. Jesus. We tried. And not like we didn't try. We tried, and it didn't work. I bet you right now, there are some folks sitting under the sound of my voice, and your phrase is, I'm trying. I'm trying. I've been trying for years. I'm trying. I go to church. I read my Bible. I'm trying. In fact, there's some folk here who in your private conversation with Jesus are saying, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. This religious thing, this Christian thing, it doesn't work. That's what the disciples are saying. It's not working. I'm not getting victory. I'm not being delivered. I'm not. It's not working. And I tried. They tried. It wasn't working. And they want to know why. So for all of you doubters, questioners, for you or for somebody else, because we want to, even if you don't need it, we want you to be, if you don't need to be delivered, I need you to be a deliverer. because the disciples were supposed to deliver. So they want to know why. So Jesus answers that question, verse 20. He said to them, because of the littleness of your faith, the reason you failed was the power of unbelief. Your faith was so tiny that you didn't cross the bridge into the supernatural that you just saw me do. Because your faith was missing. So what's the point? Your faith will determine your experience or lack thereof of the supernatural. He didn't say there was no faith. That's interesting. He said your faith was too small. Your faith was, watch this, insufficient for the problem. You had enough faith to go to church. You had enough faith to be religious. You may even had enough faith to pick up your Bible. But what you had and what you needed didn't match. Now, he tells them the problem. That problem is our problem because it's a generational problem, he says. He didn't do many miracles because of their unbelief, chapter 13 says. Now, he now wants to teach them. So I'm going to try in this verse to explain a phenomenal principle of us entering into the supernatural. He says, I say to you, he's talking to his disciples. We're his disciples. If you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you. He says, number one, you need mustard seed faith to deal with mountain-sized problems. Stay with me now. He says you need mustard seed faith to deal with mountain-sized problems. Mountains in the Bible are immovable circumstances, things you can't change. They're too big. In order to move a mountain, he says you need a mustard. Watch this. Stay with me. You got this huge problem, this huge addiction, this huge crisis, this huge issue. It's big. It's been there for years. You've tried everything you know. It won't budge. Or it looks like it's budging and then it still doesn't budge. He said, what's missing is mustard. A mustard seed faith. Now, just so you get the picture, would you help me show the folk what a mustard seed looks like? In between those two fingers is a mustard seed. Now, picture the fingers. You see the black dot? That black dot's a mustard seed. So I'm now confused. And you ought to be confused too. The reason why you ought to be really confused right now is he complained that their faith was little. Well, now, I'm looking up at this mustard seed. And that mustard seed looks pretty small to me. So how, Jesus, can you complain that I have little faith and show me a little seed and tell me the little seed can move a mountain when you just told me I only had little faith, but my solution is a little seed? Now, I'm confused. Little seed. You complain I have a little faith, but the little seed can move a big mountain. I'm a little confused. Let me tell you a little something about that mustard seed. Inside that seed, when planted, is a 15-foot mustard tree. See, the seed is tiny, watch this, but the life inside of it is big. You with me? It's a small seed with big life. Or I could use something else. An acorn. An acorn is an oak waiting to happen. You see how big oak trees get? And all of that is in that acorn. So what made their faith little was the lack of life inside of it. It was a life issue, not a size issue, because this, a mustard seed, was used to refer to the smallest kind of seed you could ever have. And you see how small it is. The issue was living faith versus lifeless faith. So what makes your faith small is the absence of spiritual life inside of it. If it's void of spiritual life, James 2 calls it dead faith. It's a faith without life. Our problem is a lack of life. So we come up with big things, big programs, big activities, big expectations with no life, so it won't grow. It won't grow. See, if something doesn't have life, it can't grow. He says, if you have a mustard seed kind of faith, that is a life pulsating with life, even though it's tiny, what you will see this thing produce will blow your mind because it's full of life. Notice the comparison is between a mustard seed and a mountain. You put a mountain next to a mustard seed? If you get an acorn in between a crack in a concrete or growing up underneath a concrete, you will see an acorn, once its life is expressed, open up concrete. How can an acorn open up concrete? Because when the life, even though small, that it has, begins to express itself, it overrides a solid slab that looks like it's covering up and sealing it. Because the nature of the life inside of it. So it's the nature of the faith that produces the power of the supernatural. Jesus says, it'll move mountains, and what looks like something that can't be fixed. Now, watch something else in this verse. I'm going to say something, and I'm going to say it incorrectly, and I want you to correct me. So I'm getting ready to say something. I'm going to say it incorrectly, but I want somebody to correct me. Here it is. If you have the faith of mustard seed, then you can say to the mountain, be moved, and it will move. Now, somebody who wasn't here in the first service, if you have the faith of a saint of mustard seed, then you can speak to the mountain, and the mountain will move. What was my mistake? No, not size. What was my mistake? Huh? I think I heard it. Not grain, not will, no. Not faith, no. All right, I don't want chaos in here. Let me restate it correctly. If you have faith, the grain of a mustard seed, here it is, you will say to this mountain, be moved. I said, you can say to this mountain, be moved. You change it from can to will, you've shifted the conversation. He says, when you have a living faith, you not only know what God can do. See, a lot of Christians will go around talking about, I believe he's able. I believe he can fix it. I believe he's a wheel in the middle of a wheel. I believe he's a bomb in Gilead. I believe he's Rose of Sharon. I believe he's the right and morning star. But they never graduate from can to will. He says, when you've got mustard seed, a living faith, you will tell the mountain what it must do. You will not simply recite what it can do. You will say, please notice something else. You will have a conversation with the problem. Notice who he's talking to. Not talking to other Christians. Not talking to other disciples. Not talking to other people. You will say to this mountain. The mountain is the obstacle. The mountain is the problem. You and the mountain are going to have a conversation. And you're going to say addiction. You're going to say situation. You're going to speak to it. And it must back off. Why must it back off? Because of the life you confronted it with. You confronted it with living faith, and the cement was not able to handle the growth of the life. Wouldn't it be something supernatural if you could speak to your stuff and your stuff would move? He says it has to do with faith, but it has to do with the living nature of the faith. And so he tells them that this is the basis of seeing what appears to be impossible, of course, within the will of God, become possible. This is not the kind of faith most Christians have. When you accepted Jesus Christ as your Savior, you have crossed over from death to life, from hell to heaven. You had a supernatural experience because you were given eternal life. That was a supernatural act when you accepted Jesus Christ as your Savior. The problem is that the faith we used to get saved that took us to a supernatural location in heaven in our eternal destiny, we skip when it comes to living in history. So many of us are going to have to wait till we get to heaven to see heaven. Because we did not live by faith on earth so that heaven could visit us. Accepting Christ takes you to heaven. Living by faith brings heaven to you. So the problem today is that there are too many unbelieving believers. Unbelieving believers. People who are unbelievers, who are believers, but they live unbelievingly. Now, he says, in closing, but this kind does not go out except by prayer and fasting. But this kind. What kind? He's talking about a certain kind of kind, because he says this kind. He's talking about a kind where demons are behind it. In other words, this is deep. This is not ordinary. This thing goes deep. So when aspirin can't fix it, you better go to the doctor. When you realize that your will can't fix it, that the folk you know can't fix it, that the other Christians you're hanging out with can't fix it, that means this thing is so deep spiritually that you must dig deeper spiritually. This kind only comes out by prayer and fasting. What he was saying to them, guys, this boy's problem was so spiritually deep, you should have gone deeper spiritually. What y'all were doing was not going deeper spiritually. And that's what most Christians run from. I don't want to do that. I don't want to go deeper in fasting and prayer. I don't want to go deeper in getting wrestling with God. I don't want to go deeper. If that thing been with you for years and you can't control it and it controls you, you better go deeper, because there may be a demon keeping that up on you. And you don't handle demons by wishing them away. You don't handle demons by taking pills. You don't handle demons. You handle demons by going deeper with God. Because only God can handle errant angels. So you got to go deeper. If you're on a bus and your bus gets stuck in a hole, and you're trying to get the bus out of the hole, and you got 10 guys there who... other guys on the bus, and they're big, strong guys too. We're in this ditch, guys. Let's get off and let's push the bus out the hole. You're in a hole, and 10 guys are pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing, and it won't move. But you're trying, you're trying, you're trying, and these guys are built. They're strong. They're weightlifters, and you're pushing, but the hole is too deep. But you're sweating, and you're doing everything you can, and you're like, I got to get out of this hole. I got to get out of this hole. I got to get somebody else out of this hole. All these people on this bus are in this hole. And let me suggest something. If you find out that Clark Kent is on the bus, You discover a man named Clark Kent is on the bus, that should change your strategy. Because you're in a hole. You're trying to push out of the hole. But somebody says, Kent is on the bus. You spend more time with Kent than you do trying to push it. Because Kent has the power. You see, the reason why Kent has the power is he ain't from here. is from a place called Krypton. He's from a place out there. But as Clark Kent, he lives down here possessing the power from up there. And when he unbuttons and takes off his shirt and unhooks his tie, and you see that big S on his chest, now it is clear the power you need for the hole you're in is really in the person you just talked to. So you don't have to kill yourself to get out of the hole when the power from the supernatural person can push you out without breaking a sweat. The disciples broke a sweat, was not able to solve the problem because they missed Jesus. The reason why the man got the problem solved is he skipped the weightlifters and went straight to Jesus. And Jesus fixed overnight what the sweating disciples were not able to push out of a hole. So when it's that deep, you go deeper spiritually, which means you need to know somebody, have somebody who knows how to go there, take you there, and lift you out of there. Now let me just close with a thought. In Mark's version, Mark chapter 9, Daddy had a problem. Matthew doesn't tell you this. Mark tells you this. Daddy got a problem. Daddy says, Jesus asked Daddy, do you believe I can heal your son? In Mark 9, do you believe it? In other words, faith now. And the man says something astounding. He says, I believe. Help my unbelief. He says, I believe, but I'm shaky. I believe, but I'm stirred. I believe, but I kind of don't believe. But I believe, kind of don't believe, but I want to believe. But I believe, I kind of don't believe, but I want to believe, but I can't help myself to believe. I believe, I kind of don't believe, but I want to believe. Will you give me what I lack so I can go deep enough to believe so that you can lift me up out of this hole? And the Bible says when he asked for help to even help his faith so that he could have the faith for Jesus to do the miracle, Jesus gave him the faith he needed to bolster up the faith he had for the seriousness of the situation and healed his son. So even if your faith is weak, you got a faith helper. So get ready for your miracle as long as you cross the bridge. Because here it is, my closing line. Without him, you cannot. But without you, he will not.